This is Ann Janzer, author of Subscription Marketing, Strategies for Nurturing Customers in a World of Churn. And you are listening to Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails.
Hello and welcome to this hopefully short-lived series that will be airing in addition to the weekly Marketing Book podcast interviews. I'm your host, Douglas Burdett, and my goal during this unusual time is to reconnect you with past guests on the Marketing Book podcast, share some ideas and inspiration, and maybe a much-needed laugh or two. I've interviewed over 200 authors on the show, and my plan is to continue this series until I either run out of authors or quarantine, whichever comes first. A word of warning, the host and guest may very likely be drinking cocktails during these conversations. I mean, come on. They are recorded during the cocktail hour. To find the show notes for each episode with pictures of each guest and links mentioned in their conversation, visit marketingbookcocktails.com. Marketingbookcocktails.com. See what I did there? And if you'd like to join the conversation, email a voice recording to me at douglas@salesartillery.com, and I'll try to include it in a future episode. I'd love to hear from you. Otherwise, connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat. Ann Janzer, welcome to Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails. How are you?
I am fine. Thanks, Douglas, for letting me join you for cocktail hour tonight.
Well, it's a service I provide to all past guests on the Marketing Book podcast, and I would encourage all listeners to join us too. So you, if I'm not mistaken, you're in San Luis Obispo?
I am, yeah.
Now, you've been there less than a year, right?
Well, like a year and a quarter or something. We moved down to January of last year, so.
Okay. Yeah. So you were in Mountain View, and then you moved, and then all hell broke loose.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully no one here is blaming me. I don't think so. But well, yeah, no, I did. This is a nice place, though, I have to tell you, Douglas, to be in this sort of shelter and home, because I can just walk out my door and there's beautiful walks and beautiful vistas everywhere, which I do enjoy very much when we're all sheltering at home. Yeah.
It's as if you planned it, Ann Janzer.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So listeners, longtime listeners to the Marketing Book podcast will know that there's this running, very tired joke that I won't let go of about how there have been more authors with Stanford degrees on the Marketing Book podcast than any other school by far. And I like to joke that, by podcast law, if there is a author who has a Stanford degree, I am required to interview them. And that's always been a joke, but just today, you probably haven't seen it, but your governor, Gavin Newsom, he just signed it into law. The Marketing Book podcast must interview any author of a marketing or sales book on that podcast. So
we have a very progressive governor, so that's good.
Well, you all clearly have a lot of sway in Sacramento, the state capital. So
that's right.
So you are the author of Subscription Marketing, which you mentioned when you introduced, and is it second edition now?
Third. I did the third this past winter. I think I managed to do it 5 years to the date. It released 5 years to the date from the first book.
And last time I checked, it's in more than just English, right?
Yes, it's in Korean and Japanese. And the Japanese version in particular has done very well. The Japanese market was, and I also had a really great publisher in Japan, a very business-focused publisher who knew how to present the message. And it did very, very well there.
Well, and this is pretty much the only podcast they listen to in Japan, so I was able to throw some, influence your way. Kidding.
Of course.
I do have some listeners in Japan, though, I'm really proud to say. And so I first learned about Ann Janzer when I read a blog post she did on Marketo's blog, and it was all about subscription marketing, and she was the author of it. And then, so I reached out to Ann Janzer, and she blew me off a few times. I emailed her like two or three times and tried to connect with her on LinkedIn. And, Ann Janzer, I deal with rejection all the time. And finally, Ann came back and said, all right, I'll do this podcast with you. And so the episode was extremely popular. As a matter of fact, I showed you the analytics, like, even 6 months later, it was one of the best performing, one of the most downloaded episodes.
Yeah, I would say that was my brilliance, but I really think it was the topic area, which was kind of blowing up at the time.
Yeah, so remind folks what subscription marketing is. And I think I saw that Robbie Callan Baxter wrote the foreword to your latest edition. Is that right?
She did. I had Robbie write the foreword because we are very much aligned in our beliefs and philosophies, although she writes about a different angle on this.
Right. So, but you did both go to get degrees at Stanford. So, but I repeat myself. But her book is The Subscription Economy. Excuse me, The Membership Economy.
Yes.
And it's the booze talking. Membership Economy. And then the more recent book is The Forever Transaction. And in case listeners don't have enough of Robbie Callan Baxter, she's coming on to Authors in Quarantine getting cocktails. So
excellent.
You know, a lot of good, but remind folks what subscription marketing is. And I am of the belief, or at least I've observed, that subscription marketing is teaching even non-subscription businesses about how to be better marketers.
Yeah. Because ultimately, that's great. I mean, ultimately, it's about forging a long-term relationship with your customers, right? Taking a long-term perspective, because that is what a subscription-based business must do. And it's a really interesting, I want to get to this, talking about how this is relevant to what we're living in today.
Oh, please.
Too,
yeah.
Right. Because I think there's something really relevant there. So when I first published a book in 2015, you know, a lot of people were like, yeah, you know, this doesn't apply and we don't sell newspapers. You know, we're selling software.
Those businesses are now out of business who said that
to
you.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, our customers would never be interested in subscriptions. But even then, you know, people who were, you know, selling software from the cloud didn't see it. The word subscription just threw them. So maybe it wasn't a great title, but I stand by it. Mm-hmm. But I think that it has to inform this ongoing relationship with your customers has to inform the way that you do marketing. And once you start, you know, once you want revenues that are sort of ongoing, then you have to market differently than you do as if you're just chasing a one-time transactional sale. That's mm-hmm. It seems, you know, sometimes I just felt like I was stating the obvious again and again. And yet, you know, the obvious is sometimes not always, sometimes it's at odds with business as usual.
Yeah. That's true. That's interesting. When I was talking to Robbie recently about her most recent book, she was saying that between when she wrote The Membership Economy and The Forever Transaction, more companies were understanding the concept of subscriptions or memberships more than in 2015.
Yeah.
But it's my sense that both of you, for as long as you're working and interested in writing these books, you're always going to be explaining these basics. I'm sorry to break it to you.
Dang, I kept hoping that, you know, I actually cut down in the third edition on some of the, you know, this is a thing, people chapters.
Right.
I thought, I can't keep doing this. You know, you picked up the book, you must believe it's a thing. And instead, I looked at, you know, added chapters that talk about how this applies to large businesses. How does this apply to the solopreneur or the small business that's not planning on growing, you know, the company of one kind of thing? How does this apply to a rapidly growing startup? I mean, because I think that there are different ways to approach this. And I sliced and diced it that way. But yeah, I've talked a lot with Robbie about this. I was watching her book develop, her latest one, as it came into being. And she's shared with me the story. I have an interview with her on my blog post about the story of this latest book and how it came about, which is very interesting. And now it's less about why do I do this and more about how do I do this. That's been the transition for her. And that's certainly the transition that I've been getting. I no longer have to evangelize quite so much. And people are asking much more pointed questions about, well, how do I really market? How do I change my marketing strategies? What, you know, what are the implications? How can I build these relationships that these great subscription-based companies have with their customers? How can I get that with my own customers?
Mm-hmm. And what, just for folks that think that this still might not apply to them, what is an example of a company that is selling a subscription that surprises people? I mean, we understand software as a service and, you know, things like that. But
sure. And then there's the wacky things. There's a subscription underwear, you know, David Mirman Scott wrote about it in his latest book, Fanocracy.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Right. The subscription underwear. That's one that you know, raises eyebrows. But on the other end of the spectrum, there's subscriptions to industrial chemicals, in that you pay for the process and not the chemicals. You're not buying the chemicals, you're buying a process over an ongoing period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And the chemical provider figures out what chemicals are best suited to do that and takes care of everything from provision to the whole life cycle to clean up. So that's another way to look at a subscription that is, you know, it's just embedded in so many industries. And it's really hard actually to find an industry that isn't somewhere tinkering along the edges, if not in the main part, with a subscription relationship, because that long-term relationship with the customer is such a powerful thing. Everybody wants that.
Well, and what's interesting to me is that when a company does stick a toe in or start to become at least part of their business more subscription-based, they're then forced to focus on the real thing their customer is buying. And it's not usually that product. It's the solution to a problem.
Yep. Yeah. It's a solution to a problem. It's an experience. It is it's something much, it means you have to be empathetic with your customers. So bringing this back to the situation today, you know, you have all of these companies that are being disrupted in their core business, right? Because either their storefronts are closed or whatever. So what do you do, you know, if you can't go out and build, it's hard to go out and, you know, sell more stuff right now to today's customers. So what if instead you spend this time investing in those relationships? What if you say, I have this time, I can't be selling, but I'm going to strengthen those customer relationships. This is now the focus of my marketing program. Because I know long-term, those companies that have the strongest relationships, the most loyal relationship with their customers, are the ones that will be resilient. They are less fragile to this kind of situation. And so you see that around you. If you look around at the businesses, look at your local businesses, what they're doing. You know, the little local theater company here is putting on a few times a week web show called The Intermission Show, and they do video interviews of actors who have been in their previous productions, so we all recognize them. They're just strengthening relationships. It's just really fun to watch some of these creative businesses look at ways to take this time. And if they can't be selling, they are building a future through stronger connections, creating community with their audience, or being generous and giving away content. I mean, Metropolitan Opera giving away its opera web broadcasts that it usually sells through the theaters, things
All
like
right.
that.
We've been watching those. We had to download the app on Roku, but it was like one a day, as I recall.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's more opera than most of us can take. <Yes. laughs> How many hours?
Right.
But it's really cool, and it's a generous kind of thing that they do that is actually creating more loyalty for existing fans, potentially creating new fans. It's, you know, it's investing in relationships, and you've got to think that's going to pay off for them in the long term.
Mm-hmm. So for marketers out there or any business people, what do you think in their attitudes and thoughts are going to change? What do you think folks should be doing, and what are you thinking these days?
Right now in this pandemic time, or just all the time?
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, I'm most interested in, or I'm fascinated, rather, by how thoughts are going to change. In other words, people aren't really going to change. Maybe certain practices in life are going to change. But they're already there. So, and it'd be like somebody saying 25 years from now, oh, the great pandemic of 2020 really put Zoom on the map. Well, actually, no, they were doing pretty well.
Yeah.
This was just an accelerant. And I'm interested in what things do you think are going to get speeded up or sped up, excuse me, I'm speaking to a Stanford English major. and I guess by doing so, it makes me start to wonder, well, what could I be doing different, like with what I'm learning, or what what client businesses should be thinking about that they may not have been thinking about.
Yeah, so a couple things. You know, one is in a way, Douglas, and you already referred to this about, you know, 20 years from now, the stories we're going to tell. We are all involved in a global storytelling experiment right now. I mean, you, me, everyone I talk to, the first question is ask, how are you doing? And you hear the story of what they're experiencing. So we can make some decisions as individuals about how we craft that stories. Everyone's, you know, has different plot situations. They may have health worries. They may have, you know, income insecurity, all kinds of issues. But we're all creating a story, and we have to decide, are we simply a passive victim of the story? Are we a protagonist who's going to come out changed, right? We are all in these stories. And similarly, every business that you're interacting with now is also living a story. And we as consumers are crafting those narrators too. Like the other day I got a fundraising pitch in the mail that was obviously written 3 months ago, had, you know, was completely irrelevant to the current context. Mm-hmm. So that tells me a story about this company that, or this organization that was doing the fundraising. That tells a story. Everything you do to your customers is telling a story. Are you trying to be generous? Are you trying to, you know, get as much money as you can now because, you know, you're worried about going under? Everything tells a story. And I think that as marketers, we need to think really carefully about what's the story we're transmitting with the things that we say, the things that we do, the programs that we have. Every transaction with a customer, with a prospect or a subscriber, it's a marketing moment, but it's also a human moment. And I think going forward, people are going to look differently at these businesses. We've seen behind we've been looking in the news behind. It's like, how is this company treating its workers? How is this company treating its workers? Are people imperiled? What is this company doing to its customers? You know, we're looking for those stories, and we will remember those stories.
So true. I think we're going to remember for a long time, and there are going to be some case studies that are happening right now that are really very generous and human focused and just wonderful. And I'm optimistic for the future of the marketing. And I think that so much of it has to do with the actions that companies are taking rather than what they're saying.
Yes.
There are a lot of companies that are in fact able to help or do something to help. I mean, you know, like I just heard the other day, Joey Coleman was telling the story about how Enterprise Rent-A-Car, you know, most rent-a-car companies only rent to 25-year-olds and up because of insurance purposes and so forth. And they realized there were a lot of college students that needed to get home. So they said, hey, don't worry about it. Just go rent a car.
and
we'll get the car later. Things like that. You know, some of the airlines are extending the tickets that we have. And as I've mentioned several times on this limited time podcast series, my son, an EMT, was, you know, he's here in Norfolk in Virginia Beach, and we were worried about him catching the coronavirus, and we still are.
Yeah.
But also concerned about him bringing it home to the family. And next thing we knew, this resort company at the Virginia Beach oceanfront said, look, we're empty.
Yeah.
And we want to do something to help somebody. So if there's any coronavirus first responders out there, you can stay here for as long as you need to. And so the company's Diamond Resorts. I want to make sure that everyone knows who they are. And I don't know where they're based and don't know much about them. And they have properties all over the place. But he's now at the Virginia Beach oceanfront with a suite, with a full kitchen and kind of quasi-quarantining. And there's a few other EMTs that are doing that. And so, you know, it's just this unbelievable generosity. And they're getting hammered. And yet they thought, well, is there something we can do to help?
Yeah.
You know, and I think they have one blog post on their website. That's it.
Right. That's, you know, that actions, you know, really speak louder than words. Absolutely. The empty words are going to make you look worse. Don't leave with just words. That's a great story. And there's so many wonderful stories. I mean, the question is, you know, you brought up Zoom. They immediately, of course, offered the product for free to K through 12 educators. They've gotten some, you know, issues on security, and they've addressed them. I think they've shown themselves as being generous and graceful under pressure. I think that's probably the best way to put how they've showed up in this. You know, there, maybe you'll show up as resilient. The little there's distilleries near us that have changed their process to make hand sanitizers. You know, so mm-hmm. now you get hand sanitizers with a little distillery logo on the bottom, which is kind of fun. And you know, it's so they're setting something. We're going to be public, you know, public-spirited and resilient. We're going to be agile. We're going to just change to do what the community needs. A lot of good stories.
There's a distillery near me, thank God, and they are selling bourbon. You can just go up to the curb and get it. Man, I hope that service doesn't go away. I don't even have to get out of the car.
Yeah.
But I digress. And they also hand you a bottle of hand sanitizer that they've made.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah, taking care of the local microbreweries single-handedly, yes. Right?
What you're drinking right there.
Yeah, so I'm drinking a brew from Oak and Otter, which is a small microbrewery in town, relatively new. I'm working my way through their whole everything they have. But again, they sell kind of curbside. You show up, and I bring my little recyclable pint thing, and they'll fill it for me. Usually it's the brewmaster himself, I think, and you can chat about the beers at a safe distance. But, you know, because they don't have the larger breweries, you know, have retail sales through stores and things, and these little microbreweries don't. Any sales they have might be at a local restaurant or pub, and those channels are both shut down. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, I'll just go and once a week go pick up some beer from one of these local microbreweries and help them keep things going during this time.
Yeah, and
it's a
really
small sacrifice.
Well, yeah, thank you for your service. And what I've done is driven around to the local breweries here, and because I, you know, I'm trying to make it easier for them, so I have a funnel attached to about 3 feet of a garden hose, and I've asked several of them if they could just pour it directly in. So I think that's also known as a beer bong. I think that's what the kids are calling it.
Kids.
And I haven't had any luck there, but I think they're concerned about, you know, safety and a few other things. But I'll keep, you know, I'm doing what I can. I'm doing what I can.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, and you have also written, you're like one of those people like Anne Handley, who to me is a, like the decathlete of writers, because you write about writing. How to write. And I think that's, for me, that seems to be a rather terrifying or thing to do. And I was able to interview you about, you've written, let me see here, and I'm going to make sure I get them all right, you know. So you've also written The Writer's Process and The Workplace Writer's Process, and we have copies of those books at the office. But the one I interviewed you about was on the Marketing Book Podcast was Writing to Be Understood, What Works and Why. And one of the things that many things in the book that warmed my heart is that great writing is very much about empathy.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knew? You know, I mean, it's...
Well, that's really thinking hard about who's supposed to be reading this.
Yeah. If you say that great writing is writing that lands in a reader's head, writing that makes an impact, that changes minds or that instructs or that inspires, then yes, it has to be grounded in empathy, right? That Stanford English degree, nice though it is to have, isn't really the key. The key is understanding your reader and maybe how their mind works and how you can get your message through to them. So that was one of the most interesting things for me in that book was the research that they do about, I cited the Alan Alda's Institute for Scientific communication at Stony Brook University, where they do these improv exercises with scientists and with physicians to help them understand how to better communicate with people in terms that they understand. And it's fascinating that some very focused and intentional improv exercises can have that kind of an effect on then your speaking and writing communication. It's just fascinating to me.
Well, talk a little bit more about what you're a nonfiction author, but you also work with writers as a, I guess, a consultant?
Not so much. I mean, I cheer on all kinds of writers, and I share everything I'm learning about writing and publishing with a bunch of my email subscribers. In terms of consulting or editing, I stay in the nonfiction realm. I'm not going to stick my neck into fiction because it is a fairly different beast. Yeah.
Well, that's what I meant. But you work with writers. And the reason I ask about that is you write for writers, and I'm going to include a link to your blog. And at one point, and this is what I found interesting, you actually interviewed me because you were doing a series for authors about how to make the most of using podcast interviews to promote their books. And there was a book called Traction by Gabriel Weinberg, and the name of his co-author escapes me at the moment, and I apologize for that. But it was all about about 19 things that startup businesses should be trying from a marketing standpoint and testing. And then ultimately, maybe three or four they end up sticking with. And they talked about how in the startup world, so many companies do the exact same thing the other companies are doing. And when actually they should actually be testing these 19 different areas and see what works. So they then, when they launched their book, they tried all 19 and then they measured it, being good marketers, and they iterated, and they realized that doing podcast interviews seemed to be really selling a lot of books. So they then went back and said, how many more podcasts can we get on to let more people know about our book? And their book really is fantastic. And so I think it was a series of three where you interviewed me and you said, well, all right, you're a podcaster, you interview authors, what makes for a good guest? And I told you some of the things, and I guess you were expecting some sort of theory of relativity for me, and I told you basically how easy it is to be a good guest, and I specifically remember you saying at the end, Douglas, I can't believe how low the bar is to be a good guest.
It's like, show up for the interview was one of your answers. I'm like, really? Really?
Yeah. Or I don't know, but it's and most all the guests that I've been able to interview, it's been a lot of fun, and they're absolutely fantastic. But it's kind of funny, and I guess maybe you were disappointed that you weren't going to have to work quite as hard on that series.
Well, it was reassuring, but let me turn this around, and I'm going to put the spotlight on you for a second, because one of the things I'm doing during this this shelter at home time is sort of naturally, but before cocktail hour, I am interviewing a bunch of people as I'm working on my next book, because I thought when all this happened, I said, you know what? All of these people who I would like to speak to have just had their calendars cleared of of speaking gigs, of travel. I'll bet I can book some really interesting people to talk to interview for my next book. So that was fun, that's a lot of work. I'm just going to say that you make it look easy, Douglas. But I am finding that, you know, because I try to read the book. They've written a book ahead of time. Mitch Joel had a wonderful blog post he wrote on how to be a good interviewer, because he is masterful, right? Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, you don't write down questions, make it conversational. I'm thinking, well, that's brilliant. And I do that now, but it takes a lot of preparation to not have prepared questions. I'm just going to say, it seems odd, but you have to really be on your game to do that. So I am just in admiration of you and the work that you do just with the Ordinary Marketing Book Podcast, to say nothing of adding on this additional cocktail hour event.
Well, the drinking certainly makes it much easier.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And it's a lot of fun, and I get a big kick out of it. And you know, it's interesting. I guess I'm like a lot of those companies we were just talking about. Where, well, first off, the podcast, I just love doing it, and it's not like it, you know, brings in all kinds of business. It's not directly related to what my company does, but I just love doing it. I love learning, and then it really makes it difficult when I hear from people around the world who will send me a message and say, "Hey, I've been listening to your show for a year. I really find it helpful. Thanks." I'm like, oh gosh, just when I was about to quit this thing, now you people are cheering me on. That's the worst possible thing you could do. It's the equivalent of my wife telling our friends, don't laugh at his jokes. It only encourages him. So, but for this series, you know, it's interesting. I think I had heard from a couple authors, and they said, "Hey, let me come on the show. I don't want to talk about the book. I don't have a new book, but there's some research I have, or something that might be helpful." And I thought, well, maybe. And then suddenly, I was at home, no longer in the office. Nobody's in the office. I went by there today, dusty, bunch of mail, piling up inside the mail drop, and. So I had a little more time, and also, you know, suddenly my daughter, the college senior, was home for spring break, and then they said, don't come back, and through all that, and then my son, you know, was things were going crazy, and I think what prompted me to want to do this daily series until I run out of authors or quarantine, whichever comes first, was wanting to do something, stay busy, but also, in my own knuckleheaded way, you know, maybe there's some help. that I can offer here. And what's interesting is I think the authors felt even more that way, because I sent an email out, like I sent to you, and I sent an email out to there's been over 200 authors on the show. And I just said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? And would you be at all interested? And within 1 hour, over 100 had responded and said, I'm in.
Oh my gosh.
Let's do it. You know, and a lot of them said, I'm already drinking, but that's not important. And but I just thought, oh, great. Let's all see what we can do here. And now I'm here. I got a message from a listener today in Charlotte, North Carolina. He says, yeah, I've been listening to your show for a long time, and I really like this daily series. Would you please keep doing it? I'm thinking, hey, gosh, man, now I'm really going to disappoint folks. But yeah, but it's been a lot of fun. I don't have to read each book for each daily interview, and I'm only doing one a day. So, and I have more, you know, I seem like I'm getting more done at home than I was at the office. Maybe it's you add in the commute and all that other sort of thing. So I'm enjoying it, and I appreciate your kind words. And let me just mention that also you are quite the choral singer, aren't you?
Yeah, although not right now. Yeah, but yeah.
Well, no, wait. Yeah, I see I'm looking here now. You are in the San Francisco Symphony Chorus.
I was. Yeah, yeah. And that was a lot of fun. Now, I found a local chorus here, the San Luis Obispo Master Chorale that I'm singing with. Mm-hmm. It's a great way to connect with people and meet some wonderful folks. And you know, choral singing is just wonderful. It is one of the things that is most definitely impacted by the shelter at home and pandemic, alas. But trying to keep singing one way or another.
You know? Well, yeah, I mean, you can sing at home, I guess, just to keep your pipes, you know.
I can. Working. There's actually I have a voice teacher who's still in San Francisco, and she does a twice a week vocalize thing. So her students all get on a Zoom. Everybody's muted except her, and we all vocalize together. And you can see the little pictures of your friends singing and things. And so that's really delightful. Somehow, this little bit of communities. But that's an example of what you're doing, just trying to put things out to connect people and add more value. What she's doing, you know, what I'm trying to do. I do weekly free webinars on writing or publishing for my email list. I mean, I think people are just feeling motivated to say, what can I do? You know, what can I do that's going to help somebody? And all of that circles back to my theme about building relationships. You know, if you can be generous, if you can put things out, you will be strengthening those relationships going forward. I mean, I'm getting to know better the people who are on my email list because they show up in my webinars and they ask questions and I get a sense of what they're doing. And that's really, really cool. It becomes more interactive. You know, you were having more conversations and listeners are reaching out. You know, it's all the best marketing is grounded in generosity.
Absolutely. Yeah. So if folks go to annjanser.com, which I'm going to have a link to, and that's Ann with an E. Mm-hmm. I know that's really important for all you.
Don't forget the silent E. We, you know, me and Ann Handley have this thing going on because I've got the E and she doesn't know.
Yeah.
That's the only edge I have over Ann Handley. She's awesome. I love her.
It's all about the vowels.
That's right.
Now they're going to be able to find these things. I see you've got courses and events, virtual events. They'll be able to find these things that you're doing once a week,
yeah,
the webinars.
Yeah.
Great.
So if you look, there's a little thing, a menu at the top called Inspiration. And if you click on that, you'll see the webinars I'm doing, some of these interviews I'm doing. I'm putting up some audio clips of them. And they're there in the little thing called Inspiration, which I'm trying to just populate with stuff during this time that we all need a little extra inspiration.
Terrific. And I even see there's webinars about book marketing and publishing. Mm-hmm. And occasionally I get contacted by folks saying, I need help with my book marketing. And they transpose, I guess, the two words. I say,
yeah.
Well, actually, my little show is more about books about marketing. I don't really know that much about how to market a book. I can send them to a few other places. So at any rate, Well, Ann Janser, I really appreciate the opportunity to catch up with you without you having to write another book. And speaking of another book, that's not something the idea you can share with us yet, can you?
Yeah, I can, because I'm doing these interviews. It's still taking shape. It's growing organically in a way, not like any of my other books, which have been much more focused. But this book is going to be about making an impact with your writing, about how to do the writing that really gets ideas out in the world for people who are building platforms or movements or, you know, true thought leadership as opposed to just sort of the marketing spin on thought leadership. So that's what this book is about. And I'm having so much fun interviewing people and digging into the research and working on it. So hopefully later this year.
Is there a title for it yet?
No, the title is one of the things that's just in flux. So,
okay. Well, maybe you can hear from some marketing book podcast listeners and...
Hey, I am open to suggestions.
They're very active.
Send them in. I will welcome them. That would be great.
Well, I hope that you and the family continue to stay safe and healthy and sane. And I appreciate you joining us on Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails.
Thanks for having me, Douglas. It's always, always fun to chat with you.
All right, everybody. Last call.